Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Tony Macklin, film historian, author of the book Voices from the Set, and a former professor of film and an all-around expert. Thank you for being here.
And a fellow film hater.
A fellow film hater. That's it. No, we don't hate film. We have high standards.
That's right. That's
the idea. It's about having high standards. So let's rip some films apart. We could start with probably the biggest movie opening this week, which is Body of Lies, starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Russell Crowe, and directed by Ridley Scott. It's a political thriller, I guess you would call it.
I wouldn't call it
no,
that.
No, you wouldn't
no.
call it. It's not political. It's not
I'd
thrilling.
I'd call it a cell phone commercial.
Oh, okay. Well, DiCaprio plays a CIA agent who is stationed in, I guess it's in Jordan when he starts, or he's in Iraq in the beginning, but he kind of goes all
over the place. He's in foreign lands, yes.
He's all over the Middle East trying to root out terrorists, and Russell Crowe is primarily back in the U.S. as his sort of boss slash handler who's running things from afar.
And one of the major points is, of course, that he's in foreign lands running through the desert and crowded streets while the Russell Crowe character, Ed Hoffman, is back in the suburbs on his cell phone. And so guess what? We recognize that there's a cultural difference between Arabia, Arab lands, and America.
Right. Well, and also the idea of the distance that when you're on the ground and you're seeing the people, you can have a sense of what's most effective and a sort of sympathy for what's going on. And, you know, the people at a remove don't necessarily understand that. I thought that was interesting about this movie. I sense that you really dislike this film.
No, I think we've given the director Ridley Scott a pass too often. There are a lot of things that are ineffective about this movie. And I think when we see Russell Crowe in a lackluster role, it shows us how meager a year this has been at the movies.
Well, it has been a meager year at the movie. I certainly agree.
And I was saying a commercial for cell phones. So it's see Russell Crowe multitask. He takes his little boy to the bathroom, talks on the cell phone.
Right.
He goes, he's in the car with his daughter, talks on the cell phone. He's by the swimming pool. Talks on
right.
the cell phone.
But I mean,
wait, no, I'm
right,
not finished.
I want to know how. Yes.
I want the audience to know how boring this cell phone litany is. And he goes to a soccer game, and then the cell phone.
Right. But I think it is a little repetitive. But at the same time, I think that's a good way of making the point of how sort of distracted that these decision makers back in the U.S. can be. That he's busy, you know, at the soccer game or taking his kid to school and deciding the lives and deaths of people that he's never even met over in the Middle East.
But I would think that only Jaina Jennison could make a cell phone interesting.
Yeah.
What Ridley Scott's problem recently has been is that he doesn't have face-to-face conflict. There are a few scenes, but when in his last film, American Gangster, he didn't bring Denzel and Russell Crowe in until the end.
Right, but there was a build to – I like that movie a lot better, American Gangster. I thought that was a pretty good movie. This is less successful.
I think if he were remaking, for instance, Thelma and Louise, which he made in 1999 –
Right.
He'd have them in separate cars. They wouldn't even drive in the same car.
You know, but there's something to be said for that. But, like, actually, I thought that this movie reminded me, at least in the first half before, because it becomes a very rote thriller, I think, later on when Leonardo DiCaprio character, he falls in love with this nurse, and you know as soon as that happens,
she's going to be put in peril.
Yeah, and that was all really lame. But earlier, when it was about the dynamic between Russell Crowe and Leonardo DiCaprio, it reminded me of like a Michael Mann film in a lot of ways. And something like Heat, for example.
Are you tongue-in-cheek?
I'm serious. I mean, it's not as good. Like, and Heat is one of my favorite films ever. I think is brilliant. And this is not in that league. But at the same time, that movie works well because you don't see the main characters together for almost the entire film, but they're constantly playing off each other and, you know, everything they do is in relation to what the other person does. And I thought there was some of that dynamic.
You brought up Michael Mann, and he directed Russell Crowe as Jeffrey Wygand in The Insider,
which is a wonderful movie. Yes, absolutely. I agree.
Character-driven and true to the character. One of the problems is that the strength, I think the great strength of Russell Crowe as an actor is he finds the nobility of spirit in his characters. I mean, you go back to Maximus in Gladiator, you go to Jeffrey Wigand, right. even Ben Wade in 310 to Yuma.
Okay.
There's no nobility of spirit in this character. There's no spirit in this character. He had him, Ridley Scott had him, gain 50 pounds for the role.
Right.
I think that was probably so that America could relate to the character. but it's not Bobby De Niro in Raging Bull.
No, it's unnecessary, too. I mean, you don't even really notice that he's gained the weight.
Ed Hoffman is more Ridley Bull.
Yes, yeah. No, I mean, I don't disagree with a lot of what you're saying, but I did think that there were interesting ideas here. I thought DiCaprio was quite good as the guy who's conflicted about between the duty and the fact that he's been on the ground for so long that he knows these people and he has a better sense of what's culturally right and he has to reconcile that with what his job is. I thought that was interesting.
The problem with DiCaprio is motivation. It's motivation of his characters. If you look at his roles, he's the boy king of acting. If you look at his roles with Scorsese surrounds him with better actors and a lot of action. And in when he played Howard Hughes in the Aviator, we could fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
But in this role, he's unmotivated. He suddenly falls in love and goes off on a mindless crusade.
The falling in love was ridiculous. I agree.
But his change in character has to be motivated, and it's not.
Right. No, I mean, at that point, I was frustrated because it did seem pointless and sort of just plot-driven. Like, as soon as he sees this attractive Iranian woman, you know, oh, here we go. But before that, I did understand, I think, his motivations as a CIA operative, as someone who's, you know, at the beginning when he has that sort of, I don't know if it's a partner or an informant or whatever, and they're going to meet someone, and Russell Crowe makes these very callous decisions back that put his partner in danger, and I got a real dynamic from them. I understood that this is someone he'd learned to trust over time, and, you know, the things that his superiors were doing were damaging that, and I did think that was an interesting
That's one scene, and then it's Run, Roger, Run, his character Roger
right,
Ferris.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Run, Roger, Run.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong, but I guess I felt like there
what?
Was...
What? Is that really? I'm valid? I'm not
you're
wrong?
You're valid. Well, I don't disagree with you about some of what's what went on with this character, but I did think the first half of the movie, I was like, this is an interesting movie. It's exploring interesting ideas. And then it fell apart. But I did like it at first.
I would say it's worth seeing. But at what point in the movie did you say to yourself, who cares?
I think once he met the nurse, I thought this is just going to be stupid. And because you can see every moment of that storyline coming from a mile away. And that was definitely ridiculous. But I liked his relationship with the head of the Jordanian security forces whatever.
That's a great point because Mark Strong steals the movie from Russell Crowe and DiCaprio. He is London-born with an Italian father and Austrian mother. He's a terrific actor because he has a presence.
Right. Yes.
And that was when I liked the film, when I got involved with – every time he came into a scene, there was a sense of – there was something about him that was compelling.
Right. No, he was. And that was another character that was complex that, you know, he was rooted in that culture that's sort of – that's foreign to us. But at the same time, you know, he was ultimately working for the same goal as the Americans but in a different way. And the way that the DiCaprio character is sort of trying to accommodate him but at the same time working at odds with him – I thought all that stuff was interesting.
And you have Russell Crowe as the ugly American cell phoner.
Right. Well, but you have to have that contrast, I think. And it was certainly more nuanced than a lot of these political movies that we've gotten lately, movies about what's going on in the Middle East. I thought that this movie did a lot of stuff better than other movies of its type. And even if it doesn't ultimately make it and it sort of falls apart when it gets, you know,
it gets serious.
It gets to the basic thriller stuff that you would expect from any movie about you know, any sort, whether it was in the Middle East or wherever.
But that is the kind of film that I have least regard for, the film that loses it, that just discards what it's about and becomes commercial first and commercial second. And it really isn't commercial. That's the irony of it. It really isn't commercial.
It's got all this political stuff in it. So, no, I agree, but I think maybe I'm more inclined to give it credit for what it did right before
and that's why we're having this discussion, because it's a question. And I think probably in the next film, when we talk about the next film, I probably suspended my disbelief more with the second one than I did with the first, and you did with the first more than the second one.
That may be true. So actually, let's get on to that. But first, I would give this probably 2.5 stars out of 5, Body of Lies. I don't know if you want to...
Well, I would have a hard time giving any movie that Russell Crowe was in less than 2.5 stars.
All right.
I think the role is awful and it doesn't work. But I didn't, and I, as I said to you, I said, who cares and what's the point? It sounds like I'm not going to, but I would give it 2.5 because at least you have prose.
Right. Yeah, you do. You definitely do. So let's move
on. Not poetry, but prose. Right.
Let's move on to a movie that I personally didn't think had a lot of prose. Is The Express, the true story, although certainly I would imagine massaged and embellished for Hollywood purposes, of Ernie Davis, who was the first African-American to win the Heisman Trophy, college football player for Syracuse in the late 1950s. And this is the story primarily of one season of Syracuse football where they won the national championship against Texas.
When he was a sophomore.
He was a sophomore, and he comes from... this small town in New York and
no Uniontown, Pennsylvania.
No. He comes from Elmira, New York, where he moves with his.
Oh,
with
that's
his
right. But originally, he comes from Uniontown.
I know you're a big you're a Pennsylvania guy. I know. Yeah. But he goes to Syracuse, and of course, he encounters racism, and you know, it deals with the civil rights movement, and really everything you expect. I could review this movie. I could detail the plot and do the review without having seen it, I think, because.
You don't like football.
Well, I don't like football, but I don't think that that's the reason. Because this movie follows the formula of every inspirational sports movie you've ever seen. And the worst part is not – the football I thought was fine. I mean I get bored watching football, but cinematically it was represented well. Mm-hmm. And you know, you got a sense of how he was a good player and why people were so impressed with him.
Let me ask you one question.
Sure.
Was there any scene in the movie where you were moved, even though you knew intellectually you shouldn't have been, but you were moved?
You know, I think it's a very emotionally manipulative film.
Yes,
and
but
I think there
does
were
it work and, at all?
I don't know. I mean, I tend to think if I'm feeling an emotion but resenting the movie for doing that, then it doesn't work. You know, it's the same as if you watch a comedy and you laugh and you think that was so ridiculous. I think it can be a bad movie even if you laughed at certain points.
Maybe this is really an audience picture rather than a critic's picture.
I
listened to the people coming out of the theater.
Well, and they loved it.
And they loved it.
Of course.
And
they love
I don't
everything. They're the opposite.
They didn't love Body of Lies.
Yeah, I didn't. I wasn't listening to what people were saying about that. But.
Well, I think the reason why I was able to cut it a break is, I guess, the major criterion that I bring to a movie is it human?
Yeah.
And a lot of these films that deal with sports. And like We Are Marshall. Didn't like We Are Marshall.
I didn't see We Are Marshall.
And I thought Friday Night Lights, the movie, was rigged.
I liked that movie.
I assume you did.
Although I like the TV series much more.
Oh, yeah. I love the
TV
series.
It's great. Yeah. It's absolutely wonderful.
And Glory Road, I didn't much like because I thought the racism, I didn't really believe it.
Yeah.
In this, the racism... In Dallas at the Cotton Bowl, where they can't even go in the team hotel.
Right.
Eventually, they're snuck into a janitor's room downstairs, and they can't go to the awards ceremony at a country club because there are three blacks on the team, and they are not allowed. So they decide not to. I thought that there was a veracity to it, but the real strong racism, and I think I kind of experienced it secondhand, was in West Virginia.
Right.
In West Virginia, they were trying to cause physical harm, and there was hatred. There was,
right.
And when I remember when I graduated from Villanova, and I followed the basketball team to West Virginia. They mm-hmm. had a game,
yeah.
And some of the fans said to us, "Is Villanova a Negro school?" Although they didn't say Negro,
right?
And so that I thought there was a, and I was, I'm usually aware of manipulation, but that went beyond manipulation to me to say, how did these things actually happen, exist in the past? Right. And I know that they did.
Right.
It may seem when we have Obama running for president
right.
that it, and it is a different time.
Right.
But to go back, I thought it was rigged. It was contrived.
Yes, it's completely rigged.
But it won me over.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that I don't believe that those things happened or that it's a real representation, a real, if exaggerated, mm-hmm. representation. But I guess we've seen that same scenario so many times. And I don't want to say, you know, it devalues this guy who achieved a lot and is worth, you know, celebrating. But I think I could have learned as much about him and appreciated his life just as much by reading a magazine article about the guy that would have taken 20 minutes out of my time rather than 2 hours and 10
minutes. I'll tell you what you would have had to do. You would have had to have, while you were reading the magazine, a soundtrack,
oh, the soundtrack
that continually had drums and music. And when they're driving down the road and there's an orchestra
that's
playing.
That's right. It was all stuff like that.
But Mark Isham, I think it's
yeah,
Isham.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, like, at the practice when they used the drums, it added attention, vitality, and energy to it.
I thought it was artificially drumming up, which, I mean, a situation that is already tense, that is already – there's plenty of suspense in not only the racism issue but simply the will they win the game issue, which is always going on in a sports movie. I think it was extremely exaggerated. The other problem I had with this is that Rob Brown, who plays Ernie Davis, is completely uncharismatic. He was uninteresting, and I was far more interested in the Dennis Quaid character. He's the coach of the team.
I was going to say, you said it was you had seen everything before. You have not seen Dennis Quaid play a coach before.
Well,
that's the first time he's played.
Was it Invincible? Was he the coach? He was the coach. No, that was Greg Kinnear. I swear, I've seen him.
No,
play
you
a
have
coach
not.
Before.
No, you
he
have se- not.
He seems so coach-like.
Yeah, and actually, Ben Schwartzwalder, who was a coach of for 24 years of the Syracuse Orange men, when they used to have a football team, and now they're like winless and pathetic. But I thought Quaid was great.
Quaid, he was better than the material.
And Quaid, in a sense, characterized or captured the spirit of a man caught in a changing time.
Right. That's true.
When he
That's
was
true. There's a
pulled both
there.
Ways.
Yes.
And the thing about – and I agree about Rob Brown. He's bland.
Yes.
This character is totally decent. I mean, he is,
right.
he is
he's
absolutely –
he's like a saint. He's a freaking saint.
Well, because it's mythic.
Of course.
And he becomes a myth. And
right.
I think because – I'm very aware of dishonesty in movie. And when a – the only thing that I thought was really dishonest about this movie, and I hate them when they do this. They did this with Invincible, which I liked a lot.
Yeah.
They changed an event on the field that actually happened into something that didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
The 87-yard pass that comes much later and is dramatic happened on their second offensive play in the first quarter.
And this is in the big – like climactic.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah. Yes. It's in the Cotton Bowl.
Right.
And so I go crazy when they do that. I say, you don't have to do it.
Right.
There's drama in
right.
it. There's
right.
there's tremendous drama when he played defense and knocked down the pass or intercepted. Make that the dramatic moment.
Right, right.
Because that's true.
It's
that really happened.
Yeah, it's very dramatic.
But to change the touchdown to a different quarter in a different time, I say, you jerks.
Yes. Well, that was, I would say, the least of my problems with this movie. But I will say I agree that Dennis Quaid did a good job. And I liked – because the problem is that the Ernie Davis is so perfect that there's nothing to hold on to. At least at the beginning, the Quaid character has, you know, this element of where he's got a bit of racism to him too.
Yes.
You know? And it's something where he has to sort of learn to adapt and overcome. And I liked that because he was flawed and there was something to latch onto with him. And Davis, for whatever, maybe he was a saint in real life, you know, but saints are boring. And he took everything so in stride and did exactly the right thing at every moment, right up until the end of the movie when he friggin' dies of cancer.
It really wasn't his character. It was a time and a place and an attitude. And I thought the character as a figure, there was nothing that defined him other than his decency.
Right.
But I thought his decency was important in
well,
in the
sure,
role.
Because it's in contrast to the indecency of people that he has to deal with. But, I mean, and the dialogue is so terrible. And the speechifying is constant from every character. And the score.
Well, let's now give me an example.
Well, the coach is always giving little mini speeches. I mean, and of course, coaches do that. I mean, that's a staple. And you know, during halftime, the coach
is this from personal experience when they were recruiting you?
No. Well, see, I don't know. Actually, I could say that maybe real coaches never do it. But in the
no,
movies,
they're salesmen.
In
they're
the movies,
salesmen.
At least, the coach will always give a speech, and you know that when they come in,
they're
from
worse
halftime,
than in the movies.
You know, yes, yeah. They're going to give a speech. But even Ernie Davis, at times, he has to give little speeches.
Well, he was.
Grandfather gives him a speech.
He was going through, we're saying that he's bland or he's a figure, but he was also, as an African-American who didn't really want to get involved in social issues, he
right.
just wanted to play football.
Right.
He had to at least recognize what was happening
right.
around
but
him.
But they give that like one scene where he goes with his cousin to the NAACP rally, and there's no tension to it. The cousin says, oh, you should stand up for something more, and he says, and that's pretty
well,
much it.
Well, he stands up when he won't leave the
right,
leave the field.
Right,
that's
right.
when
and
he stands
gives a little
up.
Speech about it. But.
And I also I also a shout out to Charles Dutton, who I think he added to the
Charles
humanity
Dutton,
of
yes,
it.
Yes, he's a good actor, but his character is the worst
Pops.
Cliche. The no, wise old
but
grandpa,
he humanizes
and
it.
And you know, you can set your watch by what point Pops dies in the movie.
Really. Oh. You gave it away.
Oh, come on. I don't think so. So I would give
at least he didn't pray to him after he scored a touchdown. He
but
didn't look
you
up
know,
to heaven.
He flashes back to Pops' words. And I will give this movie 2 stars because it's at least professionally competent for its genre. But that's about all I can say.
I liked it. I'll give it 3.
All right.
And it's a hesitant. It's not a guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
But it's certainly an imperfect pleasure.
All right. Well, that's fair. And now we can move on quickly to a movie that you haven't seen but that I've seen, which is also opening this week, is The Duchess, starring Keira Knightley as Georgiana Spencer, who is an ancestor of Princess Diana, actually, and was the Duchess of something. I don't even remember. in the late 1700s. And talk about, you know, we can go from the formulaic inspirational sports movie to the formulaic period piece, neither of which I'm inclined to particularly give much credit to. I will say that Keira Knightley is always comfortable in the period pieces, and she brings there's a certain fierceness to the character who is she's very active in politics, even though of course women can't vote at that time, and she's a fashion icon. She's stuck in a marriage to the Duke, played by Ralph Fiennes, who's just, you know, pretty much a bastard and treats her horribly, and she does give you a sense of realness to this character. But overall, again, you can sort of set your watch by all the moments that happen in this movie, and it's so focused on the sort of relationship melodrama between Ralph Fiennes and Keira Knightley and the mistress that he has, that it sort of overlooks all the political stuff. I mean, the fact that as a woman in this era, she was so influential on politics is interesting, but they don't really do a whole lot with it. And it ends when she's like 25, and you just get the sort of, you know, what happened next card at the end that you always get, where you realize she lived for 20 more years and continued to influence politics, but we don't care because the soap opera stuff is over. So that was disappointing. But I would give this 2.5 stars maybe because it was a little less obvious than The Express. But it's something that, again, if you love period pieces, you might like this. But otherwise, it's probably not worth your time.
I would say that with The Express that you don't have to be a sports fan to see it.
It would help, I think. It would help a lot. Speaking as a non-sports fan, I think it would help a lot.
I just said you don't have to be.
You don't have to be. If you love crying, maybe, then you would also like this movie. But I think being a sports fan would probably help. So let's go on to what's coming up on DVD on Tuesday, starting with the biggest thing. One of the biggest movies of the year was Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which is being released in 8 million different versions, including one where you can get a bust of a crystal skull, I think, in case you want to spend a ridiculous amount of money. And I think this movie has been subject to an extreme backlash. There's a lot of people who really hate this movie. I think mostly people who really love Indiana Jones and invested a lot in the fact that there was going to be another Indiana Jones movie, and then it didn't live up to whatever it was that they thought it would be. I kind of like this movie. I wouldn't say it's a great movie. It's got a lot of flaws to it. And I think thinking about it afterwards, I thought of a lot of reasons Right, exactly. I thought of a lot of reasons why it didn't work. But while I was watching it, I was entertained. I had a fun time at this movie. And I don't know. I don't know if you were a big Indiana Jones fan back in when.
No. I thought it was a wonderful franchise. It was very effective. This is part four.
Right.
I took down a line. Now tell me what this means.
Okay.
This is one. This you're talking about dialogue. At near the end, Indy says to another character, to his colleague Oxley. He says about the ETs, the extraterrestrials.
Right.
Where did they go? And Oxley answers, not into space, into the space between spaces. If you understand that.
The disclaimer would be the movie does not particularly make sense. However, and that's something I think afterwards I was thinking, wait a minute, this doesn't really make sense. And they deal with aliens, and I felt like it kind of got away from the semi-grounded in history storylines of the earlier Indiana Jones movies.
Do you have some affinity with monkeys and ants that gave the best performances in this movie?
That scene with the ants, though, is where the killer ants kind of devour one of the bad guys. That was a cool scene. I liked that.
Well, I said that was the best. They were the best performances. Ants were great.
Yeah. But, I mean, I thought it succeeded at being an Indiana Jones movie. And I think I agree with you. I thought the older Indiana Jones movies, they were fun, but I never had a particular love for them. And so I went in just hoping for some more light fun, and that was what I got here.
Well, one of my favorite young actors is Shia LaBeouf.
Right, who plays Indy's – well, I don't think it's spoilers
At the beginning, he's introduced in riding a motorcycle like Marlon Brando in The Wild One.
Right.
But – he doesn't do anything. I mean, it's not.
No, I mean, there's
worthy
there's his
ability.
Right. There's too many characters, I think, is one of the problems.
And Cate Blanchett, was it Cate Blanchett?
Yeah.
Cate Blanchett gave the worst performances that she ever gave.
I was entertained by her. She plays the Russian villain, and
one dimensional,
silly accent. But I thought it was very, very of a piece with the kind of pulpy tone that these movies try to achieve. So
okay.
I wouldn't give this movie a particularly high rating, but I think sort of the rabid Indiana Jones fanboys who've torn it apart and compared it to the Star Wars prequels, which it's definitely better than the Star Wars prequels. I think it's been sort of unjustly maligned in that
sense. It has its moments.
Yes, it does. And also, I know you wanted to discuss also out on DVD, which actually came out last week, was a movie called The Visitor, which I haven't seen, but I know is one of your favorites this year.
And The Happening came out. And if anybody wants to see, and I'm sure it will win the award for best performance of the year, Zooey Deschanel as the worst performance of the year, I said.
I defended this movie last week, The Happening.
I should have been here. you defended it.
I wouldn't say that it was a good movie. However, I defended its ambition. I think M. Night Shyamalan is another person like George Lucas who inspires very polarizing reactions from people, and that the sort of irrational hate for him
It had the ambition of Dennis Kucinich.
I thought it had a very interesting idea at its core. I thought it had a lot
too.
Of creepy moments.
I thought it had a...
And I thought he was trying to recreate a tone of these old, you know, 50s.
One star.
All right.
Okay. The one that we were talking about.
The Visitor. Let's talk about this, which is a good movie I know that you want people
to see.
It's
on my top 10 list.
And yeah.
A character-driven film. It's one of those films that people might not... Now, there's no explosions. Let me go up front
that's
and say
right.
there are no
that's
explosions.
Fair. That's fair.
There are no answer monkeys.
Right. Well.
He doesn't put on 50 pounds. there's a little bit of racism. But Richard Jenkins, who is a character actor par excellence,
right.
is given a leading role. He's the star of the film. And often that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But in this one, it does. He plays a... college professor, I think from Connecticut, who has a place in New York, has an apartment in New York, and his wife has died and he hasn't gone to New York for a long time. Well, when he goes down, he finds that there were illegals from some African country. I don't remember which one, and I should, but and they have to leave. They have been rented the apartment by somebody that dishonestly rented
right.
it. But the growing relationship between this man who has lost all of his purpose and this young African man who plays the drums and his wife, it is really – there's an integrity to it, a spirituality to it. It's just, I think, a terrific film that – anybody who's interested in humanity in motion pictures, human beings being human effectively and prevailing in a way spiritually should see this movie.
So, yeah, I mean, I definitely heard a lot about it when it first came out, and it's one that's on my list of to see this year. Absolutely.
Also, last week, you may not have, but we showed it in our film club.
Yeah.
There's a 50th anniversary of Touch of Evil. What do you think of Touch of Evil?
Yeah. Oh, I love Touch of Evil. I love Touch of Evil. And in fact, I think I have this 50th anniversary DVD. I haven't watched it yet. But yeah, Touch of Evil is a great movie. Orson Welles
right.
Is a sort of noirish thriller. It does feature Charlton Heston as a Mexican, which is you know patently ridiculous. But given the time period, it's from 1958, I think it is.
And he got it made, Charlton Heston. It wouldn't have been made without
right.
him.
And he brought Welles in, I think, who right. directed yeah. and also plays this sort of.
And it has the classic opening tracking shot.
Which is
that
an
is,
amazing shot, yes, where you're watching this bomb in a car. And no, A Touch of Evil is a great movie, which I've seen several times, and yeah, I haven't, like I said, watched this new DVD, but it seems like they've done a lot of work giving you, there's like three different cuts of the movie mm-hmm. on it, special features, and all sorts of stuff, so yeah, that's definitely one to pick up. And quickly, I will also recommend coming up on DVD on this coming Tuesday, a Romanian film called 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, which was also very critically acclaimed sort of late last year, I think it was. It's been a while. Before it's come out on DVD, but a very austere, sometimes difficult to watch drama about a woman attempting to obtain an illegal abortion in Romania in the 1980s during the communist regime. And yeah, I mean, it's not a fun movie to watch, certainly, but it's very intense and very, you know, very human, I think. There's moments to it where I think it pushes a little too far in the sort of look at how miserable things are kind of tone.
They were pretty miserable.
But right, they were quite miserable. And I think for the most part, it conveys that with a good amount of subtlety, just these people going through the sort of minute things that they have to accomplish just to get this one thing done and to avoid the government cracking down on them and catching them. So a really interesting film worth seeking out on DVD. So that probably, or The Visitor, you know, or Touch of Evil over Indiana Jones. But if you wanted to see, you know, Indiana Jones,
yeah,
it's a fun one.
Film is a habit. Going to the movies is a habit. And sometimes you just feel like it's like eating. Sometimes
right.
you feel like
some junk food.
We know you never feel like a vegetable.
Well, so, that is a good point.
But sometimes you just need a taco.
Right. And that is what that movie is. That is definitely what that is. So. check that out on DVD, and that'll do it for this week. My thanks to Tony Macklin for joining me.
I always like to talk, as you know.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
For Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.